It's 12:09. Welcome to the Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here, and we are looking at Valentine's Day dead ahead, just as the Titanic faced the iceberg. That'll come up from time to time through the program today. Do you have a Calphalon pan? I can never pronounce that, but I think that's it. We actually have them at home, Calphalon pans. Well, that's one of the companies that uses GMM nonstick coatings. We'll have the CEO, Ravin Gandhi, come into the studio a little bit later to talk about ways to get out of sticky situations, maybe. But I'm also interested to talk to him about the idea of whether street smarts outweigh book smarts. I mean, when you're hiring someone, when you're a CEO or hiring for a company, do you look at the GPA? Or do you look at maybe they're street savvy? And I want to distinguish that a little bit from experience. So we'll see how that goes a little bit later in the program. Scott Kleinberg will be here as well to talk about what's new in social media. And then Stephen Dime, the co-founder and CEO of Flowers for Dreams. But it's Friday, and we start Fridays with Andrea Haines. She is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, and she's in the studio this afternoon. Andrea, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, so it's Valentine's Day. Let's talk about... I'm shocked. I guess I shouldn't be shocked because it's been happening for a long time now. But, you know, I think I saw somewhere where 25% of younger people in a year will use an online dating service to get a date. I mean, it's become now the normal thing.
It's pretty much taken over the world. And in fact, a little inside baseball, but we had a quote in the story about someone saying kind of, it's acceptable now, it's the cool thing now. And I was like, we really have to take that quote out because that literally doesn't even need to be said anymore.
No, right. And that just speaks to, it's outdated, isn't it? I mean, it's the way it's done.
It's so routine now.
I'm trying to remember. I remember It's Just Lunch was before there were online dating services. You go to a movie and in the previews, they'd have the slide for It's Just Lunch.
Oh,
do you
yeah.
remember that?
Yep. And they would actually connect you, which I think is what some of the services are trying to do a little bit more of versus just letting you chat online forever. They would actually get you out there.
Right. And so you'd have to actually meet someone. But here's the thing about online dating or online anything. It's not true. You know?
That can be a problem.
Just people make things up. They make up their histories. They make up their age. And that's why I want to get to this new dating site. It's called Jibe. Comes from someone from Highland Park. It's brand new, right? It's just getting started.
Yep, they're just getting it started. And their selling point is that they are for a slightly older dater. 35 to 65 is the range that they're looking at, and they are promising to verify members' names, ages, and addresses.
How do they do that?
So kind of as a way to filter out people that might be lying about other things. So they're just, you know, having more contact with the client versus just letting them sign up and make up anything they
want. So the idea is if you're lying about your age, you might be lying about other things
too. Exactly.
Right, because I guess a picture doesn't really help. And I could post a picture... Well, not that I would post a picture of myself, but, you know, of me in my 30s or something like that.
Yes, which we all say you should get your business headshot taken and, you know, use it for the next 20 years at least.
So this is called Jibe, and it's a way to sort of cut through that so they can verify your age and such. But I was shocked a little bit by the price of this. $99 a month, $250 for 3 months. That seems high to me. But that's because maybe I have no idea. Do you have any idea what a going rate is?
Yeah, I think that might seem a little high. You know, it's hard to tell with a service like this that's also just getting started, right? If they might be offering a value that's worth that.
I see.
We'll stay tuned and see.
Jibe. And can people use it now or is it not?
It is live, yeah.
Okay, just up and live. And in reading that article in Blue Sky, I came across something else I didn't know about. A website called Best Date Night. And this comes from a guy out of Hyde Park, James Parker. And this sounds pretty cool, too, where you just sign. It's a club. And then you don't tell me about it.
Yeah, so they're offering, this is another one that's kind of just getting started. It's a newer service, but they're offering to help you not find a date, but once you have that person, for you as a couple to find interesting things to do together. They're also using a little bit of that idea of like the last minute booking. So you pay a set fee and then you're able to sign up for dates, for fun outings, for creative things to do. So you're not going to the movies or whatever it is
right.
that you're always doing. But they're also, to some degree, using some of that last-minute discounting idea. So a concert that has extra tickets or, you know, they're partnering with businesses to fill restaurants,
okay,
to fill concerts.
So I'm thinking of, like, there was recently, maybe we talked about it, where it was a kids' club, you know, where there where kids would have different, you know, days with dinosaurs
yep.
and things, and you would join the club for a monthly fee, and then you can go to these things free. So that's kind of what we're talking about with experiential dating. You pay a monthly fee, and then you can pick so many dates.
It is. It's similar. They work slightly differently, but it's definitely a similar concept that you pay a certain fee, whether they call it a subscription or whatever name they have for it, and then you have access to a certain amount of activities.
But you're saying also then that maybe that's a line on concert tickets and things like that, like if so something comes in late?
Yeah, so they're offering sort of incentives and other programs for if you're willing to go last minute. You can do the plan ahead route, but you can also do a last minute route that, you know, if you can do a 9 p.m. dinner reservation or, you know, it allows you access to more
That's
things.
That's pretty cool. Best Date Night, it's
Yeah, it
called.
Sounds like it has some interesting potential.
BestDateNight.com. Okay, so we need a breather from that. How was that for a
breather, right?
How was that
this
for a week segue?
This was our story of the week and probably the company that's mad at us for the week, but that's okay.
Okay, so Breathers, this company out of Montreal, and they, if you're having an affair in the workplace, no, that's not right.
Well, it's not exactly right. They are a company called Breather. They offer the idea of hourly rentals for work. I know, right?
Are they on Lincoln Avenue?
Everyone starts laughing. You see hourly rentals, your mind goes one place, and there's basically no way to stop that.
I've seen those hotels.
Yes. So they are saying that in the modern world with, you know, mobile workforce and all those things, that there are actually other needs for hourly rentals that people may have when they're downtown. So that would be to work, to go to an offsite location, be it your colleagues, be it your whatever. You can go and, you know, just work in a different environment, or obviously if you're a freelancer, that type of thing, and you need, you know, a space to hold a meeting, it's that idea. It's approximately $20 for an hour to use the space.
And what do you get for 20 hours, $20?
So the rooms have, you know, conference tables, sofas. You get access basically to a room. Unlike, you know, one thing that they'll say is a little different is you're not cutting through a co-working space or cutting through another company. You're actually able to access their spaces directly from a hallway. So in other words, you would, yes, go to, I know, so you're laughing
like
because we could not.
Privacy, right.
I know. Right. So we had to ask. So we asked the CEO the obvious question, is this something people would might perhaps use for other types of affairs than business affairs? He said when he started the company, he had to ask himself, like, can I handle getting this question, you know, every day for the rest of my life,
right,
basically. So they know that it's likely to come up.
So if you have a meeting there after your $20 hour and you have a business agreement, do they refer to it as a happy ending?
No comment.
But okay, aside from that, I can see though how this would literally work because
I could see many ways to go.
Well, you go by and you see people sitting in Starbucks together or
definitely
the Oban Pan or something.
Definitely.
And this is a place where they can actually get a place to meet. And maybe get some work done.
Yeah. And there's that whole idea of the third place, meaning it's not your home, it's not your office, it's some other location. So perhaps that's legit.
The other thing I like about it is, you know, there's a Starbucks right across the street from here. And more than once, I have walked over there to get a cup of coffee and I've come upon, I know it's a sort of a personnel meeting or
yep.
something that maybe I shouldn't be seeing.
Well, a lot of us don't have offices anymore. You know, we're in the newsroom, we're in open spaces, but that's now a trend everywhere where people are in open offices. They don't have a place to have those meetings or, you know, sometimes you just need even a conference room to spread out your items and, you
sometimes
know,
you need to have a private meeting away from the eyes of the office.
Scenery. And then there's that.
Right. Okay. So let's leave, since we're talking dating and all of that, Groupon, maybe. Finally, some good news for Groupon.
Good news for Groupon. They posted really strong earnings on the fourth quarter, and the stock reacted well. It was up 25% last time I checked late this morning.
Is that because of new leadership, or is it coincidental, or where are we
there?
They
do have new leadership, and they just had such a super strong quarter that I think was beyond what anybody was expecting. Their new CEO, Rich Williams, was in place for two of those 3 months, so we'll see how they're able to bank on that as the year goes on.
Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Thanks for coming
in. Thanks, Steve. Happy Valentine's Day.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
You're listening to the Business Lunch. Let's get a look at the traffic hotspots. Here's Dolly McCarthy. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Friday afternoon, the Friday of Thanksgiving weekend, so we've been kicking around some of that today. Scott Kleinberg is in the studio, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
You know, I was talking to Andrea Haynes of Blue Sky Innovation about online dating and how it's become the new norm, right?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I saw this stat that 1 in 10 U.S. adults have tried an online dating site, and that's triple what it was 3 years ago.
So it's
so
just
huge.
And so, you know, the idea of people relying on other people to set one. I met my wife on a blind date.
Oh, wow.
Well, I guess maybe online dating doesn't count as a blind date. No.
No.
So, I mean, the idea of being set up or having meetings like that, or you're not, you, I just wonder, you need to meet this guy in my office, or
yeah,
are we all just beyond that?
I guess so. And, you know, but it's so crazy easy, you know, swipe right, swipe left, you know, find your next person just like that.
Yeah, we're talking about one of the new sites that now verifies the ages of people who post.
Oh, yeah.
That's
going
to take a lot of fun out of it, Scott.
No kidding.
It's just not going to be the same.
No kidding.
We've been talking a lot about Twitter lately, and there was a story, I think, out yesterday where they did not grow at all in the fourth quarter.
They actually lost users,
and so they're trying to do things. They're trying to figure out what's going to work. And one of the things they're doing is this, they're sort of shaking up the, I want to use the word timeline, but maybe feed is the better word, or what's the right word?
They call it timeline, and people call it feed too, you know? It's chronological, and chronological is the reason why Twitter works, but they think that it needs to be changed. They think it needs to be updated, so they want to make it so you see your best tweets first, the things that you missed. And they've been doing little tests like this. You might have seen something pop up at the top of your feed that says while you were away. Now they're making this a permanent feature, and people thought they were changing it completely. They're not. They're making it opt-in. So the settings rolling out over the next 3 weeks, but you go into your settings and you hit this button, and basically it means every time you come back to Twitter, it'll show you what it thinks, based on its algorithm, the top tweets from the people you follow that you missed. Quite possibly people that you don't follow that you might want to follow that you've missed as well. And then it will show you everything happening in real time.
I guess I did see that where it would say, it said while you were away when I signed on.
I've been seeing that too. And this is like that whole thing all put together into one setting that basically says, okay, well, here's what's happening now. And that's great. But more like Facebook, that seems to be Twitter's trend. Let's see what we can do to compete and be like Facebook. I think that is their downfall. Twitter is not Facebook. Facebook is not Twitter.
It's funny though, how different terminology becomes, you know, in the lexicon where they're now sharing terminology.
Yes.
Whether it's timeline.
Yes.
Or hashtag, right?
All that stuff. Yeah.
Hashtag came from Twitter, did it not?
Hashtag came from Twitter, and it's funny that you say that because hashtag goes from Twitter to Facebook. Facebook starts the timeline. Twitter starts to do that.
Right.
It's like they all take – and they should share because, you know, good things share from each other.
It's a language. I mean, you keep the same common language.
It totally is, but Twitter's taking it one step, in my opinion, one step too far, and they're trying to be too much like Facebook. If people wanted Facebook, they'd go to Facebook. No one's going to go to Twitter and say, hey, I've got to switch to this because it's more like Facebook. It just it can't work that way.
I mean, in position yourself as a compliment, right?
As
a cousin or a sister or a brother or something like that.
Exactly right.
Let's go back to the early days, way back in the olden days of playing internet games. What is it called? Internet Archive?
Internet Archive. It's one of those places where you go, Internet Archive, I think it's .org, you go there and you'll just never come out. I mean, it's video games, it's just everything that's old school new again. And now they've added all these video games, and I saw this morning and I didn't realize the power of this. All of the games that were online during the Windows 3.1 era, so early mid-90s, you know, it's like online Wheel of Fortune and just crazy games
that
you can now play for free. I was very good at that too. And you can now play them for free.
Remember Dr. Spatzo?
No.
Do you remember that?
No.
I don't know when it was, but I got some computer where there was a program called Dr. Spatzo and you could get it to talk to you. And this would have been the early 90s too. So Internet Archive, we go back for that.
Yes.
We got a minute left. If I were a dog, what would I look like? Yeah, you better answer carefully, Kleinberg.
I need a computer to tell me that. I couldn't dream of telling you
so
that.
So there's this site, and what's it called?
It's called whatdog.net. It's from Microsoft, and it is supposed to be a site that helps you identify your breed of dog.
See,
because
that's
you
what
know,
I didn't
you don't
get.
Know what your dog is.
So the idea is that if you have a dog, like I have a dog, and it's a Portuguese water dog.
Yes.
But if I would take her picture, go to what-dog.net.
Correct.
And then they would say, oh, that's a Portuguese water dog, or that's a Labrador or whatever.
Yes. It's supposed to make a database to help you and then help them identify dogs better.
People have started using them on themselves?
Of course. Because, you know, what fun is it just to identify dogs when you could put in a celebrity or put in yourself and say, hey, I look like a Labrador retriever. So there's a lot of that.
So you could go to this website, upload a picture of yourself, and it will tell you, even though it's not the intention.
Correct. It will still tell you what it looks like. It'll show you a picture of a dog.
Uh-huh.
And if you put the right person in, they find a dog with a similar kind of face. I hate to say it like that. They kind of kind of works.
I'm going to ask this next question with a little caution, Scott, but you've checked, haven't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What kind of a dog are you?
It was a dog I hadn't heard of. It was a blue something hound.
Uh-huh.
And I know dogs, and I didn't know what this dog was. Of course, the photo of the dog that it shows has spots. So it's like, wait a minute, my photo is me in a sweater. And it was a solid green sweater. So I don't know what they're thinking.
We'll wrap it up that way. Just in time for self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to whatdog.net for your Valentine's Day sort of view of what you would be as a dog.
Very fun thing to do on a Friday, too.
Have a great weekend, Scott.
You too, Steve.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Veronica. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch this Friday afternoon. And in the studio now is Raveen Gandhi, the co-founder and CEO of GMM Nonstick Coatings. Raveen, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Steve.
I want to talk to you a little bit about hiring and management of people and things like that. But talk to me first about GMM Coatings, because apparently I'm a client.
I guess so. I love to hear that. GMM Nonstick Coatings is one of the world's largest suppliers of nonstick coatings to the cookware, bakeware, and small appliance industry. We supply nonstick coatings to basically every major American brand, a lot of household names, and about 40 million Americans every day, apparently including you, use GMM Nonstick Coatings.
I have Calphalon pans.
Which is one of our great clients.
Did we used to call that Teflon and we don't now, or is that different?
The thing about GMM is we were one of the pioneers to be a generic from Teflon.
I see.
Teflon was invented by DuPont. It's a chemical called polytetrafluoroethylene.
Okay.
That's where the name Teflon comes from. And we were one of the first people to say, you know what? Forget the brand. Let's kind of make something that's an invisible component. And we let our coatings actually be a silent part of the cookware. And we let people like Calphalon market their own name. So that's kind of been our real
competitive
edge. Oh, I
got you. Right. So when I buy a Calphalon pan or if I buy a crock pot, a George Foreman grill,
it's our coating on all that stuff.
But we don't call it GMM or anything like that. It's a Calphalon pan.
Yep.
How's the business?
We're growing like a weed, which is great. We've got a facility in China. We have a facility in India. We have about 250 employees. We have a big U.S. sales team. I started this business about 8 years ago with a partner, and it's just great.
So Raveen Gandhi is here, and he had no idea that when he sat down, he was going to talk to me about my pans. I had an issue with the Calphalon pan, and I sent it back, and I still am convinced, as we were talking about, that it's something that I did wrong. But
you always love it when you hear, you know, consumers who say, you know, it must be my fault because, you know, it probably wasn't, but it's
but I want a new one.
Way.
Right.
But they sent you a new one.
They sent me a new one.
That's
right.
Yeah,
it's very Midwest, isn't it? Gee whiz, I'm sure that I'm really sorry. I broke your pan.
Well, and that pan was probably made in Perrysburg, Ohio, right outside of Toledo. So it's the ultimate Midwestern values.
Right. So let's go to the hiring office. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about was this idea. There's a conflict. You know, I've got a daughter in college. I've got a son who's going to college. And, you know, I hope that when they come out, they're going to be book smart. Right. They're going to know by rote or by experience how to handle business issues or communication issues. But that doesn't always prepare someone so well for the workplace.
Yeah, that's right. Certainly, my kids are 3 and 5, so someday they'll hopefully graduate college. But without a doubt, as parents, you obviously want your kids to be book smart because you're graded externally. You know, you got great report cards. It means you know something. But in fact, being street smart is something that potentially might be, in my view, more important in terms of getting a job or getting hired.
What do you mean when you say street smart?
The way I look at street smart is, probably most importantly, being comfortable with uncertainty. The thing about being book smart is that you do your work, you memorize something, and someone tells you, congratulations, you got 100%.
Right. Okay, what was that question, Mr. Gandhi? Then I look it up in the book and I recite the answer to you.
Precisely.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I'm the CEO of a company. I don't have anyone who I can go and get the answer from. Frankly, sometimes I wish I did.
Right.
But I don't. And I feel like being comfortable with uncertainty is a tremendous characteristic of being street smart.
So it's different from, and I'm glad to hear that, because I didn't want this to make this about book smart or experience smart. It's something different than that.
Oh, yeah. Some people use street smart almost in a pejorative sense, like it's negative. I don't see that at all.
Right.
I see street smart as someone who certainly may be book smart. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive.
Right, right, right.
It's just when I say someone is street smart, I use it completely as a compliment, meaning this person can read people, they can read the situation, they have a good gut instinct, and they trust their judgment, and that's very much what I look
well,
for.
Well, so, but what you're describing, I mean, when I think of street smart, I think, I mean, the implication is it's something you learned on the streets, right?
Right.
It's something you learned out in the world. But in a way, what you're describing is a certain savvy or almost a confidence.
Yeah. But I would actually say that I agree with you. I think a lot of that stuff is learned in the world. And I think that having experience with people and interacting with people, for instance, bringing it back to my five-year-old kid who's in junior kindergarten, sometimes I go into his class and I watch what's going on.
Right.
And I think you can start to see this stuff that young, mm-hmm. which is, okay, this kid wants this to happen. Is how does he use his little influence to get it or to not get it? Does he cry? Does he go to the teacher? I think that stuff starts early, and I think that you can see it.
When my son was 5 years old and in kindergarten, he told his teacher and classmates that his father was Sammy Sosa.
Right.
Maybe there's a certain amount of street smarts there to get what he wanted.
Precisely. And, you know, and you have a passing resemblance to Sammy. I can't say it's extreme, but, you know.
Only physical.
Right.
You know,
clearly.
Mental,
clearly.
Not mental, but I mean, I guess physical is the wrong word. The way we look, but my abilities on the baseball field aren't close.
Well, I like the story.
How do you then instill in your five-year-old or others? I mean, because, you know, with my kid there and yours at five, maybe, again, it almost sounds innate, not something you're fostering. If you've got a speech smart, I mean, a book smart kid, how do you sort of foster that savvy that we're talking about?
So I hear the question as, can these skills be learned? Right. And I feel like most people are born with a certain type of talent. And so you're going to be somewhere on that continuum. But I absolutely believe that things can be learned. Just the way you can learn book stuff, you can mm-hmm. learn street smarts. And I think that, you know, relishing experiences, being adventurous as a parent now, you know, promoting different diversity in your you know, not being what they call, I think the term is helicopter parents.
Sure.
You know, don't do that.
And so if you are bringing someone in, they're applying for a job, they want to work with you, and they seem to be, I mean, do you ever turn someone away, even though they might have this great sort of intellectual wherewithal, the great book smart idea, but they just aren't going to fit? You say no thanks?
Oh, sure. And I think that the modern interview process is very much set up to suss this out. For instance, when most people go in for office visits in a big corporation, they'll meet three or four different people. And then what happens is, in my company, after the person leaves, I get those people together and say, what'd you think?
Right.
And usually the responses are not a measure of that person's book smart. We know we have their CV. We know where they went to school. We may even know their GPA. But it's things like, did he look you in the eye? Did he shake your hand? Did he nod his head? All these little intangibles. I put that in the street smart category.
So you can be book smart and not you cannot get the job by being book smart and not street smart.
You cannot get the job. There's too many negatives.
Okay. You can get the job by being not street smart, but book smart.
I think that In my company, what I like to do is I like to say people need to have a combination of
right.
both. Obviously, there's some element of being book smart, but I believe that for many sales jobs, for instance, I don't think you can get the job if you're not street smart.
I'm going to try again because that confused myself. But so you come in to apply for a job, you can be really book smart, not street smart, and get the job. Can you come in and apply and be really street smart and not familiar or book smart and get the job?
Well, absolutely.
More likely?
I think it actually might
really?
Be more likely.
So those tuition bills?
You know, this is the tough thing. This is the tough thing because I, even listening to myself say this, I feel like I'm promoting, oh, don't worry about
right.
schooling and all that, which is absolutely ludicrous, okay? It is so important to be book smart, but I say don't be book smart to the exclusion of being street smart.
Right.
And you need to have a balance and you need to have both.
Ravin Gandhi is the CEO of GMM, the manufacturing facilities in China, India. They make the chemicals, the spray that becomes the nonstick surface and so many things we use. Thanks for coming in today.
It was my pleasure.
I appreciate it. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:51 here on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, Valentine's Day just around the corner. And, of course, that means huge pressure when it comes to men being prepared and things such as that. So we've been trying to cover some of that through the week. I want to talk to Steve Dime now is on a phone line. He is the co-founder and CEO of Flowers for Dreams. Steve, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be here again. I'm excited. Good timing.
That's so funny, Steve. I have to tell you a story. So, you know, I found an article about you and the work you're doing with refugees right now, and I thought, that's great. And I said, we should talk to him coming up on Valentine's Day. So we set it up and started to do a little research, and I'm like, wait a minute, I talked to this guy a year ago.
It's been quite a year, yes.
Tell me about the year. So just to tell your story quickly, I mean, you started, I think, in college with this idea that you're going to sell roses outside high school graduations. If I recall right, it was New Trier. And the idea was you're going to take half the money, buy backpacks for poor kids. It went really well and grew from there. And lo and behold, you and your partner have a business going, right? Did I sum that up well?
That's exactly right. We essentially started as flower peddlers when we were college students. That was our summer gig between years in school. And it's evolved into this business now. And we kind of fashion ourselves really the socially conscious flower service. Every bouquet benefits an amazing local charity. And this month, as you were alluding to, all the proceeds fund Refugee One, which is a refugee resettlement agency right here in Chicago and Chicagoland.
All right, so tell me the story. I guess you and others were at the airport when some of these refugees arrived at O'Hare.
So we had the opportunity probably about 6 months ago now to partner upcoming in January 2016. That would be the month where we would partner with Refugee One. And when we first heard of the opportunity and evaluated that partnership, we work with a lot of nonprofits, typically less controversial causes in certain instances, like puppy rescue and such. And we thought, although this may be a little controversial to support refugee resettlement, especially Syrian refugee resettlement, we wanted to stand up for causes that we believed were important and could save lives. And we really went full steam ahead. And the first thing we did, which you just mentioned, was we went to the airport, O'Hare Airport, in the middle of a kind of a vintage Chicago snowstorm with half our team, and welcomed a new family, a family of seven Syrian refugees who've been traveling the world for a year. And it's rare that they're, one, allowed into Illinois and that we can connect with them and get them approved. So we were waiting at customs quite a bit, but it was an amazing experience. We handed them warm clothes, welcome kits, and flowers as a greeting to welcome them to our city.
Oh, that's great. Welcome them with flowers. And so they are the people and others who benefit from the sales you've got going this month.
Correct, correct. One quarter of our profits fund the charity of the month. And in this case, it's Refugee One.
Now, did I read also that you were training some of these refugees to actually be flower arrangers?
That's correct. And this is a really unique partnership. Our team really embraced the cause. And following that evening where we welcomed the family, we actually hosted a day-long seminar, introduction to floral design and floriculture, really, to hopefully give these refugees opportunities for maybe temporary or more gainful employment in our industry. And what resulted from that workshop, that day-long seminar with our designers, was not only a certificate of completion, which they hopefully can use elsewhere as they continue to get more skills, but we employed three of the women who participated.
Wow.
So all week long for Valentine's Day, they've been assisting with processing, pruning, and designing flowers.
All right, Steve, tell me about those three women, and I'm interested in whether you've seen a change from them from the day they were at that seminar to where they are today, how the job and how working with flowers might have, forgive me for the cliche, but helped them bloom a little bit.
it's a good word in this case. Well, you know, it's a temporary job, and we wanted to really kind of walk the walk, not only train them, but employ them if we could. And they, Amidi, for one, she is a refugee from the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and this is her first job in the States. She's only been here 3 months. Sifunu was another woman, and then Lula. And these women are mostly from Africa and Southeast Asia, the ones that at least attended the workshop, and they were farmers in a past life, and they have some of the same skills. They might not have the language barriers significant, but before their families were unfortunately displaced by war or persecution, they were in an industry similar. And so they're pretty quick learners. And I think it's been a great opportunity for them not only to make some money, but again, feel like there's a real chance that they can be employed in this kind of a work environment in the States, and something that they're used to doing.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. Well, I appreciate you doing that for them and to an extent for all of us. I'm grateful for that. I appreciate the fact that you're joining us today because you must be swamped.
It's a busy day. Yes, it's a very, very busy day.
How does this Valentine's Day compare to last year?
It's much bigger. We actually are going to do about 4 to 5 times Valentine's Day last year. So it's been a big year of growth and opportunity for us.
And do you think that's because you were on with me last year?
Very likely. Yeah, right. You get all the credit to you, Steve.
I'll take it. Tell me, Stephen, how do people get more information? How do they find you?
Visit us at flowersfordreams.com. That's easiest, or they can always call and place an order there. Learn more at 312-620-1410.
Great. Let's set it up. I'll talk to you again next year.
Yeah, this time.
You bet. Stephen Dime is the co-founder and CEO of Flowers for Dreams. Have a great weekend, Stephen. Good luck.
Thanks. Happy Valentine's Day.
Bye-bye. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.